Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, we got quite a crowd here today.
We most certainly do. This is going to be a fun segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Jordan Rose, co-founder with Atlanta Science Festival. And we're going to talk with Jay McCann, owner of Jay Christopher's. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce regional manager with PNC Bank. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Eddie Myers. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing today?
I am doing well. We are delighted to have you. PNC Bank, you guys are making a bigger and bigger splash here in the Metro Atlanta market. Get us grounded here. Mission, purpose, what are you guys out there really trying to do for the folks in Atlanta?
Well, one of the things that we're trying to do for the folks here in Atlanta is provide exceptional service at the end of the day. We began this operation now 2.5 years ago with the acquisition of RBC, and we currently have, along with all banking operations, we currently have 70 retail branches that we're going to expand upon. We've got 191 ATMs that are located in Walgreens, and that too will expand as we go forward. So our intentions here going forward is to grow our commercial banking, retail branch banking, all of our corporate banking operations, real estate. We do full service financing for customers, commercial and or retail, and we intend to gain significant market share as we go forward.
Now, how do you, when you come into a market like this, how do you kind of integrate yourself into the market and become part of the business community?
Well, one of the things that we did early on is that, along with a multitude of different advertising avenues, we got involved in the community right away. So one of our principal programs that we have is our Grow Upgrade program, and that is a $350 million initiative that the bank has had over a 10-year period. And so we started with that as our entree into the community and community involvement. And with our Grow Up Great program, we appeal to kids from 0 to 5. It's an initiative that the bank has had, and we provide, for instance, we provide reading books and things of that nature, mm-hmm. as well as we partner up with a bunch of different groups, Sheltering Arms being one of them. We partner up a young audience at Woodruff as another one of our partners. We partner up with them. We provide a bunch of different services as well as executive reading. I too have gone out to Sheltering Arms and done some reading with the kids.
And then you encourage the other people in the banks to do that as well?
We're unique in that way. Yes, we do. But we're unique in that way since when we ask our employees to volunteer, we give them 40 free hours a year mm-hmm. to volunteer with respect to our Grow Up Great program. So they can go to any one of our partners and volunteer, and they'll have 40 free hours a year.
So full disclosure, I'm a client. I have a branch right down the street from me on Lassiter Road.
Good.
And they treat me like Norm when he walks into the Cheers bar. Mm-hmm. They're also very friendly, and there's something about the culture at PNC that they are looking beyond just the digits on my checking account. I mean, they really engage me. They're trying to figure out how to help me. They see me with the Business Radio X logo on my shirt or one of the show logos, and so they ask me about business accounts and stuff. But it's not – when they're engaging me, I can tell it's not just, oh, I wonder if we can get him to do another checking account. I mean, they are actually trying to help me. There's something about your – culture.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear.
Is it formal training? Is it just the way you guys?
No, it's our approach to our customers. I mean, anybody can win your business in good times, okay?
Right.
But keeping your business over a period of time takes a lot of work. So what we try to do is make sure that we know and understand. We go through a program and know your customer. Know and understand your customer. Know and understand their needs. So in order to know and understand their needs, you need to ask questions. Get engaged. Ask them questions. Know what their needs are. So from a business standpoint, if you were a commercial loan or a corporate loan, I would try to find out what your 5-year plan is so that come 5 years from now, we have provided the financing for you at that point in time. Not, it's easy to do it today. Right. We want to make sure that we're there and available for you 5 years from now. So the same thing, if you're thinking about expanding on your building, or you're thinking about, you know, your anything that's going on in your life, about getting married and setting up accounts for your kids and things of that nature, if we ask the right questions and ask questions and engage you, then we can help you plan and provide planning for that, and then suit you up with the right person that can help you get to where you want to be 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now.
It sounds like you're really invested in the relationship. It's not just a transaction to your people.
No, it never has been, and it never will be. Those folks that it's part of my motto too. Those folks that think it's just a transaction will not work for us long. But you know, and I'm the president, so I can say that. You know, so. But at the end of the day, you know, it's to our core. It's part of our core business that mm-hmm. we take a vested interest in your client. We take a vested interest in ourselves as well, or our other employees, to make sure that, you know, that we're bringing up our other employees. Because we've had to come into this market not just with PNC folks, but we've had to hire a number of bankers and associates from other institutions across the board.
Right.
So we had to bring those folks in and educate them on the PNC way. And we say that the PNC way. It's not always the right way, but it's a one way of doing business. Exactly. I mean, I've told folks, hey, look, we don't have the market. We have not cornered the market on customer service, but we know how to do it, and I think we do it very well. And if, you know, for a lot of businesses, if you don't think you're in the customer service, or even as a financial institution, if you don't think you're in the customer service business, you're going to be out of business.
Now, as the kind of at the head of Georgia, how do you get the branch managers to work within their community and, you know, for their specific branches? Are they charged with going into the community and kind of integrating themselves into the community, the business, and the kids as well.
Yes, all of our, in fact, every employee is charged with getting involved in the community in one form or fashion or another. And we meet with our managers. I meet with the managers, and I go to all the retail branches. I meet with all of our RMs. I meet with everybody, and I've got 1,100 employees. So I try to meet with everybody at some point in time during the year, sometimes in groups and so forth. But yes, they're all charged with getting involved in the community, Boys and Girls Clubs, the Y, in one form or fashion or another. It's part of our culture, and it's something that we do, not just here in Atlanta, but across the board and everywhere where we have retail branches.
I think I referred to you as a regional manager at the top of the show. You're actually Georgia Regional President. I want to hear a little bit about this backstory. How did you get to here? And walk us through your career path a little bit, if you don't mind.
Oh, my career path is interesting.
Do we have time?
Yeah, well, we do have time. Actually, I lived here in Atlanta for a number of years. I played ball for the Falcons. I was running back for the Falcons for a number of years.
Oh.
Prior to that, I went to the Naval Academy. So came in, played for the Falcons, went to graduate school at the same time, finished graduate school. My Falcons career was over. And then initially I went to Chicago to work. I worked for Continental Bank for a number of years. And after being in Chicago for 3.5 years, my wife and I decided we needed to move back to warmer weather. And that was an easy call. So we came back to Atlanta, got back integrated into the community. And then I started working for Transamerica Business Credit, I think, at that point in time. Worked for a number of different banks, including Bank of America, or what was Nations Bank at the time. And then I had interviewed while I was working for a smaller finance institution out of St. Louis. It was Mercantile Bank that had come into market for St. Louis, and I had opened up a regional office for them. I had interviewed with another bank out of New York that wanted to also establish an office here in Atlanta. And then that cadre of folks went over to PNC. A year later, the same folks called me and asked me if I wanted to join PNC. And that's when I began my career with PNC as a business development officer.
Now, do you have any leadership tips maybe that are different from the Navy than from football to banking, or are there some similarities?
There's a lot of similarities from a leadership standpoint, and one of the basic leadership things that I've always used is do what you say you're going to do. And it's basic, right? So if I use that with my customers. So I don't ever tell my customers something that I can't do. I don't ever tell my customers something that I'm not willing to do. And, you know, and so if you do what you say you're going to do, that's pretty straightforward. And that's almost like a handshake deal at the end of the day.
Right.
So, and I believe wholeheartedly, and that's the same thing for employees. So if you tell them, hey, look, this is the way it's going to be, and they do opposite, you bring them right back and say, hey, look, this is where it's going to be. Right. Do what you say you're going to do is pretty basic, but it rings volume across the board.
Earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that your folks are taught to ask clients and potential clients about this five-year horizon and really trying to and help them get some perspective on what they're trying to accomplish over the longer haul. I'd like to get some input from you, if I could, from the client standpoint. Is there some wisdom, even if, let's say, Lee and I, this business, Business Radio X, as we expand, maybe we're pretty sure we don't need or want a loan or a line of credit or anything this year, but we know that we're probably going to want to do some pretty major expansion coming. We should start building relationships with loan officers and those kind of folks now, yes?
Exactly, and that's what you do, and that's part of, you know, nothing ever happens overnight. Think about it. So if you want a loan, in some cases, if you want a credit card loan, yes, you can do that overnight. But if you're talking about a serious loan or you're talking about doing something serious, it generally does not happen overnight. It takes some time. And part of that time building is building a relationship with an individual that you can trust over a period of time. And it takes time to build that relationship. So once you trust them, then you're more willing to give them more information so that they can structure something that fits you. And when I say that it fits you, it will not fit, you know, myself. It won't fit, you know, anybody else. It's something that's specific,
right,
just for you and tailored just for you. And that's unique. And that's what we try to do with our customers and clients personally, as well as our customers and clients and prospects, you know, from a corporate and commercial standpoint.
Now, are there any niches or industries that you guys specialize in?
I say we're eclectic, you know, to a degree. I mean, there's industries that we don't particularly love, but for the most part, there's most industries, you know, we provide financing to.
I was going to write you a note real quick to say restaurants and science conferences. That's who we
have. That's who the other guests are.
I'm not so sure. You know, we might be able to make an investment in a science conference. I'm not sure we'll finance a science conference. But restaurants are pretty easy. You know, it's
especially
all cash.
Ones with the kind of track record this guy.
Exactly, it's an all cash business. But when you think about a restaurant, really, you're dealing with that individual. You're dealing with the owner of that restaurant or multiple restaurants. I mean, we don't shy away from restaurants. We've done fast food restaurants and the like across the board. So, you know, you're really dealing with that individual. And they are a little bit, not that they're difficult, but in order to understand the restaurant and understand the ebbs and flows and the nature of the cash and everything else, you got to understand that owner.
Right.
You got to get to know them and spend some time with them and get to over a period of time, then you can, you know, feel comfortable. Get a level of comfort that you can provide all of his needs and meet all of his needs at the end of the day.
Can you share some tips maybe for our listeners that are going into a bank for the first time and are trying to build that relationship? Like, what's some of the stuff they should have? What are some of the things they should do or not do?
Depending on what they're looking to do, well, first of all, they should always go and find a PNC bank. That's what they should always
it's
do.
It's easy to find. PNC.com, that's right? Right?
It's PNC.com, but that's the first thing that they should always do is go to a PNC and based on what their needs are, they can talk to someone in the office. There's always somebody in one of our retail locations that can address their needs, take the information that they need, and then somebody will, if a professional is not there, say they're looking for a mortgage and a professional's not there that can address their needs from a mortgage standpoint, they will put them in touch with the person so that person will follow up with them and address all of their needs and let them know what they need to have for that secondary meeting.
But if I'm a business owner and I'm just trying to kind of get the lay of the land, like Stone was saying earlier, we don't have a line of credit, but that's something we might be interested in. Right. We don't know what we don't know. So we would just go in there and there would be a business specialist. Is that what you have in the branch?
We have business bankers in all of our branches and that cover all of our branches, and they'd be able to help you help you figure out what you're looking to do and find out, because we've got a multitude of different vehicles, okay, mm-hmm. that can, you know, it's not just a revolving line of credit. Something else might work better for you at the mm-hmm. end of the day based on what your particular needs are, based on what you're looking to do. So a short-term loan, a long-term loan, it just depends.
Now, when I have this relationship with this banker over time, do I check in with him every 6 months? Is he going to contact me periodically just to see what's up?
He better be contacting you.
My guy's contacting us. So the folks on Lester Road, they're doing a fantastic job.
So he should be checking in with me to see if there's any other needs. Because you're saying that you want this, in your mind, the business banker should be a trusted advisor of mine.
Yes.
Right? I should be incorporating him. If I'm making a business decision, I should at least ask him or bounce it off of him.
Yes, you should. Because sometimes, you know, your needs change over time. Mm-hmm. And so your needs might increase. Your needs, you know, there might be divorce. There might be something else going on. In my prior experiences, we've had multi-million dollar companies where the individual gets divorced and he needs to refinance his company in order to pay, split the profits of the company with his wife. So we've had things of that nature. And so by us staying in contact with the customer and making sure that we understand what's going on in their lives, and not only just from a business standpoint, what's going on in their lives that might have an impact. We've had clients pass away and things of that nature. So we've had to provide financing, and even in a downturn, because of our understanding of what happened holistically, we were able to continue providing financing to our customers across the board. And we made a definite decision at that point in time that says, hey, look, what happened was not our customers' fault. So at the end of the day, we just continue to provide financing to a whole host of them to help them out of the doldrums at the end of the day. And that's what you do. But that's what you do when you continue to, you know, it's an ebb and flow. They seek you out and get to know you. And by the time, at the end of the day, by the time you build a relationship, you're talking to each other on a routine basis. They know and understand your business. And they know and understand the particular issues that are of your concern with your particular business. And over a period of time, they're able to address that. And even to the extent, I've had situations that even to the extent I could not provide certain types of financing to my customer, at the end of the day, what I did was I referred them to other individuals and to help them, because that's what you do. I mean, that's what you do as a banker, as a financial advisor, as a person. You want to help that company survive. You want to help that company succeed. And if you can't provide it, then I feel it's incumbent upon you to say, hey, look, I can't provide that, but I know someone else that can, and here's the name of the individual, and give them a call.
Now, it sounds like you're saying that a business owner, if they're not including a business banker as part of their trusted advisors, they're missing out as an important resource that could help them in ways that may not be obvious.
Well, there's he might be able to know of some things because, mind you, the business owner is focused on just his business.
Right.
I've seen and looked at thousands of different types of businesses and how they run and how they're financed, how they're structured, how they get sold, how they get bought, and a multitude of different things. So what we do is, at the end of the day, what we do is we look at that business, we'll talk about that business, but we'll talk about that business collectively, not just him, not just so you don't
right,
have
not ac- just in a vacuum.
That's
you kind
right.
of have an idea of the
exactly.
macro view of this, and so you can see best practices all around, and you can give me an idea of trends or things that I might not be aware of.
Exactly, to the extent that we'll even bring in, you know, we'll talk about economic trends, we'll talk about what's going on, what we see happening. We've got an economist on staff, so we'll talk about what we see might be happening with your mm-hmm. particular industry going forward that might have an impact on your particular business. Not everything that's happened economically has an impact on every business going
right.
forward. So if it has an impact, we would like for you to know about that so that you can plan and take corrective action if corrective action is needed.
Now, in PNC, would you say that you serve mostly consumers or mostly businesses, or what's that split?
The split right now for us here in Atlanta is about 40-60. So 40% of our customers are corporate and commercial, and 60% of our customers are retail.
Are you okay with that, or you want to change that?
I'm okay with that. I'd like to get to the point where as we grow, through the natural evolution, what ends up happening is 60 to 70% of your customers actually become corporate and commercial. And
so you want to flip that.
Yeah, it flips, but it happens through the natural evolution, because what ends up happening is you grow your corporate and commercial customer base, and then they become retail customers, but they don't grow. Your retail customers don't grow as fast as your corporate base does. Yeah.
Well, what I find very encouraging about this conversation, it strikes me that the PNC banker may be very knowledgeable about different banking disciplines and practices and information and economics and all that, but they're just well-rounded.
Yes.
Because they're gonna know, you know, Jay McCann or somebody like that, because they're out in the community and they're doing stuff for the community together, and they may refer me to a lawyer or a CPA. They're gonna be out in the community and connected. It's got to be fun work. What do you like? What do you like best about it?
Playing golf. I take a number of customers. Mm-hmm. I take a number of customers out to play golf and prospects out to play golf.
Because relationships are important, right?
Relationships are very important. And think about it. You spend a lot of time working, and most of the time, if someone comes to meet you in the office, you will say, okay, fine, I have a half an hour. Let's talk, and you can get out of here within a half an hour, because I got something else to do. But if I get you on the golf course, I got you for 4 to 5 hours.
Right.
A lot can get done in that.
And a lot can get done. Earlier in my career, I closed seven transactions, large transactions on the golf course. And basically, I remember one out of Florida that I closed, and the company said to me, says, look, this is the CEO of the company, picks up his ball out of the hole, and he says, look, you know me better than my own banker. Let's do business together. Just like that.
Wow.
I closed that deal in 30 days, because I had spent, granted I closed in 30 days, but I had spent 6 months calling on him, talking to him about a multitude of different and various things, about his plans for growth, his plans for his business and things of that nature. So I had a very good understanding about him and his business and what he was looking to achieve at the end of the day. And so it helps me from that standpoint get a CEO on a golf course for a period of time and just get them, you know, and you don't always have to talk about business. It's just getting to know that individual. And that's the hardest thing in business, in banking, in any business,
is
getting to know that individual and finding an avenue where you can spend enough time with that individual. And you know, trying to go out at night and have dinner, most individuals want to go home, just like you do, right? Sure. So they don't want to spend a multitude of time after working hours having a couple of drinks. They'd rather do something that's a little bit more fun, get a little bit of exercise. Tennis works, racquetball works, and golf works. So, you know, I try to do that and try to take as many CEOs and CFOs out and get to know them and spend some time with them there.
Before we wrap this segment, I want to get a little insight, if we can, your perspective on recruiting, training, the selection and the training process, because I get the idea that you have some specific insights on that.
Well, I'm a big proponent, and the bank is, on teamwork. So I look for, you know, me personally, I try to look for athletes, folks that have played sports, that have been on teams or been in the military, you know, anything that you've had to do with somebody else and not just yourself. And, you know, we what we try to do and our culture is, one, it's a very collegial culture, so that if we can't do something for that particular client, you find somebody else within the institution that can help them. Or if that particular client has a need for treasury management and you can't provide treasury management, then you find your treasury management partner and you provide that aspect for them. So it's a collective. So you got to work together in order to achieve that, in order to achieve the best outcome for that client. And you keep the client first. So if folks are all about just, hey, look, me and what I can achieve and what I can get done, and is not concerned about your fellow associate, and is not concerned about keeping the client first, you won't last
long
in the organization. Right.
Where can our listeners go to learn more?
Your listeners can go to www.pnc.com. www.pnc.com. I forgot one W. But
and then you can just find any branch that's close by?
You can find local branches, and you can find our headquarters here located on 12th and Midtown.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon. You got to come back. I just think there's an awful lot we could talk about from a leadership perspective, from educating business people on how to build relationships with bankers and really cultivate that relationship. So we got to have you back sometime.
I will be. Anytime you need me, just call me.
You got it. Hey, listen, you got to hang out with us while we visit with our next
guest? Yes, we will. Thank you very much. Now,
yes, Lee. Sir.
Thanks.
Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Jeff J. McCann with J. Christophers. Did you learn anything in that last segment? And do you rather be called Jeff or Jay?
I prefer being called Jay.
All right, Jay.
I switched throughout my career, and I don't know half the time what I'm being called, but I go by Jay.
All right. Well, then, Jay, it is. What'd you learn in that last segment?
I'm going to go to Eddie for a loan after we're done here.
Oh, and by the way, Jessica, please do leave Eddie's microphone open because I think he may have something smart to say during our other segment. So we're going to leave
about
your
anything
microphone.
Smart. But.
So get us caught up with Jay Christophers. Another full disclosure statement. My kid, high school age, has a part-time job in one of your restaurants that's undergoing some renovation, and so she hasn't done a lot for the last several weekends, but it's been a marvelous experience for her.
I'm oh, she must you. Be at the public house
yes,
then.
Sir. Oh, yes, sir.
We were renovating the public house. Anybody that's ever been there before, it's a 160-year-old building in downtown Roswell, and the floor collapsed on us. So we've had
it wasn't Kelly, I promise.
Sabotage, yeah. So we're going to have to go to get a loan to finish this up now. So
I know a guy. Relax.
I know a guy, too.
So we're renovating that, trying to bring back some of the historic charm of the building and bring out the uniqueness of that old building. While we've got it down, we're going to make it nice again. So, yeah, we have a lot of employees such as your son or daughter.
That's my daughter, yeah, Kelly. Yeah.
Kelly. We have a lot like that. It's a great place for high school students to get their first job. You know, we don't serve alcohol. So from 16 to 18-year-old kids who go to high school here in Atlanta, it's a great job. They work only weekends. Doesn't interfere with their schooling. You know, they have their Friday and Saturday nights off to go to the, you know, where they go to the pep rally or games or whatever it is. And they have this innate ability to want to please guests. I don't know where that comes from, but these kids, I guess, they look at the guests as like their parents. So they have this innate ability just to want to please them. And we just train them how to wait tables. Train them how to smile. That was your job.
Well, I'll tell you, Stone, when his kids started working there, he was like, man, whatever they're doing to train the people, they're doing an amazing job, because he thought you guys really cracked the code on that.
Well, it's really simple. We have 10 steps of service, but my career started with Chili's and Steak and Ale and Hooters, and they do great training. They do great training programs, and you learn it starts with training. It always starts with training. You know, like I said, it was your job to teach Kelly to smile and have a good time, but our job is to teach her how to wait tables, which is the easy part.
Now, when you're selecting a kid, is that what you're looking for? The person who's just naturally a smiler?
Looking for a smile. And the funny thing, Eddie said the exact same thing. We look for people involved in sports. Always looking for, and team. He talked about team.
How about that?
They hire people, I hate to say, that are tennis players or golfers. They're not team players. Golfers and tennis players are playing on their own. We look for lacrosse players, basketball players. A lot of the football players play for us, work for us also. And there's a side benefit is that all their parents, all the boosters come in
right,
to see these
right.
kids at work.
It's good for business.
Yeah,
right?
They like to put them through the ringer.
So what compelled you to strike out on your own, and what compelled you for that breakfasty, brunchy format?
Well, I've been in restaurants all my life, and I realize it's a dead end career. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of benefits.
So much for the restaurant show.
Yeah,
thanks.
Well, there's no retirement benefits. There's no no IRA account or any of that stuff.
Right.
So I realized I had to have ownership in order to be able to work. I saw so many of my friends come in right out of college, work 60 hours a week, which is expected in the restaurant business. Well, eventually they have a family and a life and kids. And they can't do those hours anymore. And what happens is a young person comes in and takes their place, pushes them out. They've got no future. So I knew that I had to have a career. I had to have equity in some sort of business. And we were actually looking, my partner and I, Christopher, were looking for, he wanted to do Ruth's Chris. And at the same time, we wanted to open a La Peeps near my house. And the two kind of branched together. And I said to Chris, I said, why don't we do a breakfast concept? And it kind of born from that. It's worked out very well. I've been able to bring a lot of my friends or coworkers from the Chili's and Hooters days work with us now. My managers are done by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They're done.
Nice.
You know, no nighttime. One of the best things that happened to me is I was able to spend time with my kids when they were going to school. I could be home when they got off the bus, and that was very important to me. Now you got to work weekends, but other than that, everything has a downside.
So now when you open up the first store, how has the business changed compared to that?
You know, it's a lot healthier now. The whole industry has changed a lot, and people are much more into health. Right now, everybody's into the low carb has been a big trend. Egg whites. We hardly sold any egg whites 20 years ago. Now it's one of our biggest movers. Turkey bacon. We didn't have turkey bacon, turkey sausage on the menu when we started. Our turkey sausage actually outsells our pork sausage now. That's how it's changed since then. And there's a lot more competition. We've got a lot of national restaurants coming to Atlanta that are fighting for the square footage for us, and that's been tough for us to deal with also.
That's what blows my mind. There's so many great restaurants in Atlanta, and I don't know how we would fare if there were two or three radio media properties focused on getting business people in a studio and having these kinds of conversations. You and I'd starve to death. And there's a great restaurant on every corner, and yet you guys are thriving.
Atlanta's a tough town for restaurants. It really is. I mean, you look at a lot of national chains have come to Atlanta and been run out. They come in, you know, like a lot from Dallas and the Tampa area, come to Atlanta as the next stepping stone, and they're gone in 3 to 4 years. And it's a tough market here. And I think we're lucky because Atlanta really appreciates local businesses. If you look at, they are very loyal to local business. So they're very loyal to us because I'm from Atlanta and the people we hire from Atlanta, Chris is from Atlanta, and it comes back to you.
Now, do you have some pretty aggressive expansion plans? Are you going to kind of stay close to home, or have you decided? Or
we just got out of a five-year foray where we tried to franchise, and it didn't sit well with us. Chris and I just aren't big businessmen. I mean, we started out just wanting to open two restaurants. I live in East Cobb. We wanted one in East Cobb. He lives in Sandy Springs. That's all we ever wanted to do, and it's really grown since then. People like our concept, and people come to us with a spot, with a financing, and they want to do another Jay Christopher's in their community, and that's how it's grown. So we're back now to just him and I running it again, and when we see a good site, we open it up. Our next store actually is going to be in Athens. We're opening a store in Athens next month. We got plenty of employees up there, all the kids. You know, and George is a very hard school to get into nowadays. If anybody knows, it's a very hard school to get into, and a lot of our servers go to Georgia, which tells me we're doing a good job hiring good kids.
Sure.
Yeah.
So now, are you primarily here in Georgia, or you're outside the state?
We have most of our stores are in Georgia. We have two in Nashville, we have one in Macon, and we have one down in Savannah.
So what's next?
We take it one day at a time. We take it. We've talked about Charleston. We actually have a man. The reason we opened the Savannah store is my first manager moved to Savannah. So we opened a store down there, and Stacy's down there running it now 8 years later. We now have another manager who's been with me for 12 years. She moved to Charleston. So she's down there looking for a spot for us down in Charleston. So maybe we'll be in Charleston next.
So now when you're doing that, it sounds like very organic growth. Like you're trying to help your employees get more invested in their future by giving them these opportunities to open their own stores. That's what I'm hearing.
Absolutely. As I said before, I looked at the restaurant industry, and there's just no career there.
And this kind of gives them a path, right? So now, do they have an ownership stake when they go there?
Yes, they do. They develop an ownership in it.
Wow. So you can grow as you get motivated employees. You're open to growing wherever they want to go, right?
Absolutely.
So talk for a little bit about the franchise bad taste in your mouth. Because there's a lot of franchising. We've heard some positive things. And, you know, some companies build their company to be franchised. And then we've heard some negative things where sometimes franchising becomes kind of adversarial between the franchisor and the franchisee, and which kind of defeats the whole purpose. Can you share some more stories?
Your franchise fees all go to the lawyers is what it does.
The lawyers and the franchise broker,
yeah, exactly. They're the ones that make the money off of it. And you end up defending yourself for every issue that is brought up, whether it be the site selection or equipment or hiring practices. You're liable for all that stuff. So it didn't sit well with us because we're hands-on people, Chris and I. We're very hands-on. We're in the stores all the time. If you go by Sunday East Cobb, I'll be cooking in the kitchen there. I love cooking. And it left us with a bad taste because also it's like that analogy where a woman marries a man who's perfect and then wants to change him as soon as they're married. Well, this franchise company said we were perfect, and the day we married them, they started changing everything about us. So I was like, well, I guess we weren't so perfect after all.
Now, Eddie was talking about in his segment about commitment to community, and he's really gotten his folks behind that and probably really attracts people in the first place that are invested in community. Speak to that a little bit from your perspective in your business.
We do the same as Eddie. We have our general managers involved in whatever charity they want to be involved with. We nice. Try to get them. I think they're more motivated if they pick the charity they want. So yeah, the Atlanta Science Festival is now on our
It's on your radar now, right?
But we've also, because we've gotten big in Atlanta, we've picked some big partners. Obviously, we do the Susan Komen Pink Ribbon every year in October. We do Make-A-Wish. That's mm-hmm. the middle of the fundraiser we're in right now. Actually, last year, if I can brag, I was honored as the Man of the Year for Make-A-Wish. And I'm really just the figurehead who took the award, but it's really all the managers right. and servers I have, and actually our customers. It's our customers who donated all the money. We provided 4 wishes last year, and we're trying to do 5 this year. And it's very fulfilling in the smile. It's amazing how, and we've been through some tough times. The economy hasn't been great. Our customers give. I remember in 2009, when it was all doom and gloom, and we did, at Christmas time, we picked families from local schools to, you know, help in Christmas. People dug down deep. I thought, well, maybe we should go to one family for every 2 or 3 stores. Let's not mm-hmm. overextend. No, we went over the top. We had, at that time, we had 12 stores. We were able to provide for 18 families. So I was very impressed. And just like with Make-A-Wish, every year it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And you would think that our guests would be bothered by it, being constantly, you know, knock on the door, right. give for this. But we, if they are, they don't let us know. I mean, they get into it wholesale just like we do. So we do that. We do, what's the other events? We do Atlanta Union Mission at Easter, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. We donate tables down there for the homeless. And we do local stuff, you know. So that, it comes back to you. If you give yeah. to your local community, you'll see them in your restaurant eating there, you know, supporting your business.
Now, Eddie, you've been around the country, worked around the country. Do you think that's unique to Atlanta, this level of collaboration that, you know, the helping the plugging in and helping the local community so much?
I think it's more unique to Atlanta. I mean, you see it, you know, I mean, here in Atlanta, you've got the non-for-profits and you've got the profit companies. And I think that we all work well together. Mm-hmm. And I think that you've got a uniqueness here in Atlanta that you really don't see in other parts of the country. I mean, and we work, I mean, I'm involved in a number of different organizations around Atlanta, but the one overlying thing is that theme is that you've got both nonprofits and profits working together to achieve a particular goal, regardless of what it is. Mm-hmm.
So I want to go back, if we could, to when you were making that decision to leave this job that you probably had pretty well figured out at Chili's or wherever, and you went out there on your own. And what I'm looking for is to get a little bit of counsel for our listeners who have either just started businesses or thinking about starting businesses, because it can be a scary, less than fruitful time. Did you borrow money? Did you, you know, fool family and friends? Did you go to some Eddie type folks? Or
we borrowed some money up front. Yeah. My partner is also involved in nursing homes. He had some money from doing some nursing homes. And the truth is, we opened the first door on a shoestring budget. We did. We found a landlord who was willing to work with us, who wanted us in the center, who mm-hmm. gave us some money to build it out. Friends and family helped us out. My brother helped design the kitchen. You know, my sister-in-law was my first front-of-house manager. So everybody pitched in to build the idea that is Jay Christopher's now. And people along the way, it's amazing how many people, when you tell them your dream, want to help you. It's amazing. They don't want anything for it. They just get excited about helping you make fruition of your dream. And so we had a lot of unknown people in those early days that helped us with, whether it be making connections with somebody or whether it be providing a piece of equipment or maybe telling their friends about us, sending us in there. We got free advertising in early days with the East Cobb neighbor because she just liked us so much that she goes, I want to see you succeed, so I'm going to send a lot of my friends in here so you don't go out of business. Because in the restaurant business, it's like 80% is the number of that go out of business.
Wow.
When we were opening the first door, the fire marshal said, why are you building a restaurant here? I said, what do you mean? He goes, we call this death row. And I started thinking about it, and he's right. I started thinking about all the restaurants that had come and gone along that strip, right. and he was right. I got lucky. We found a niche. A lot of my friends did the same thing as me, and they went bankrupt. But what they would do is they would go into an old Applebee's building and open up a pseudo Applebee's because that's what they knew from the Chili's and Friday's right. days. And my thought was, if Applebee's can't make it there, what are you going to do different that's going to make you successful? And it didn't work. So we found a niche in the breakfast business, and I hired a lot of good people. Most of the people I hired at the beginning are still with me today.
Wow.
And it was kind of – I had confidence in my abilities. When I was with Chili's especially, if a store was struggling, they'd send me to go straighten it out. And it's a very simple concept of just even serving people good food, good service, and a clean environment. Eddie said earlier, tell people what you're going to do and stick to it. That's all you got. I mean, it's amazing to me how many people in business, they would stick by that simple philosophy. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, and then I'm going to do it. You'd be a millionaire 10 times over because so many people don't do that. They tell you what they think they're going to do, and then they fall short of it. So I knew that one store would do well. The challenge has been moving beyond that store, finding good people like Stacy and David and Sean to run other stores for me that also have that entrepreneur spirit, you know, that really care about their guests and their employees to make the place successful.
Now, Eddie, I know you've got your spreadsheets and your financial disciplines, and you have to play within some boundaries, but I got to believe your folks are also, they have to be attuned to this kind of this kind of vigor and passion. And even if they can't help right that second for whatever reason, because it falls outside of whatever those boundaries are, right, then they can at least build a relationship with this guy and help him get to the right point. Is that?
Yeah, and that's exactly true. And I mean, anybody that has a passion for the business, as Jay does, you can see that. And yeah, and the things that he's done well is that he believes in customer service and he believes in serving the customer. And that's what you got to do. I mean, I said earlier, I mean, if you don't think you're in a customer service business, then you're not going to be in business long, because we all serve folks. We all serve people. And we've got to provide that service, and it's got to be quality service, not just, hey, what you think you want to see or hear. It's got to be quality service and what they deserve at the end of the day. And you deliver that, and he does, because I've been into his restaurants, so I know he does good food, and I know he does quality service. So, you know, I know he does that, and that's key. That's key to your business surviving and business growing.
Now, how many years has it been for you guys?
We're in our 17th year now. Yeah, we opened our first store in January of 1997. I know one of the questions was had first what challenge of opening that first store, and I'd tell everybody, well, there was a little event going around Atlanta called the Olympics back in '96. We couldn't get anybody to come do any work in the restaurant. Literally, couldn't get anybody even to come out. They people were telling us triple pay. You pay us triple our normal wage, because they were getting paid so much money to build the Olympic Village. Why would they do anything else? So that put us about 6 months behind our opening schedule. It was, but then, of course, after all the restaurants closed when they left town, we got all their equipment for free. They're like, come take it, sure. We got all Planet Hollywood's old equipment. It saved me probably $18,000.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So what do you need and want next, and how can we help? You need some more good kids? You want more customers to know about you? You looking for more folks that might be interested in collaborating with you on a new property at some point? Or?
We're always looking for good sites. Always. Okay. We have to have a landlord who wants us, because we can't afford to pay what the Longhorns and the Chili's of the world do. Our average check average is a little over $10, where we don't do the sales they do. So we have to have somebody who's going to give us a break in the rent and really to be successful. We like going in neighborhoods, you know, as opposed to business areas. We like being in neighborhoods so we can be part of that community. And we're always looking for good workers. Always looking for good workers. It's a challenge out there. It's amazing to me when you hear about the unemployment rate being so high. We've got jobs available for good people. Good people are hard to find.
They just got
to
smile.
Yeah.
They practice their smile, right?
Smile. Yeah, exactly.
And just say what they do and do what they say, right?
Right. Right.
Basic.
What fun this is, and what a shot of enthusiasm to have. I got to have you come in and just pump my guests up in the green room before they come
in. I'll bring food next time. Yeah. You know, if I'd known, I would have catered for everybody.
No, between your attitude and your food, I mean, what a delight to have
you around. I'm very lucky. You know, my son one time was doing something at school, and he said, Dad, you own the company. You don't have to go to work. I said, Hunter, I hope when you get to be my age, you get up every day looking forward to going to work. Because I've been in jobs where I hated it, I hated getting out of bed, and you don't do a good job when you do that. I look forward to going to work every day and talking to people, eating my food, drinking. I drink way too much coffee. I got to stop back on that. I probably had too much coffee this morning. That's why I'm bouncing over here.
Hey, how can you not look forward to going to work when you have all the blueberry crunch cakes you can eat?
That's right. Yes. Thank you. That's good. Good plug. Good plug. Thank you.
All right. Let's leave our listeners with some coordinates so they can get in touch with whomever to find out about any of these opportunities.
The best place, obviously, is our website, www.jchristophers.com. That's the best place for you to contact us. And then anybody that sends a note on there, I answer personally, or Barry answer personally every comment that come to us. We make it a commitment, because I go around and I make comments to people just to let them know how their business is. I don't want to come across knowing anybody else. And I really appreciate when somebody says thank you, you know, and that's thank you goes a long way. That's the best way.
And you guys are, they can find you on any social media network too, I'm sure, Facebook,
I'm not hip to social media, but we do have Cheryl and Melissa. They take care, and Jordan. They're all over the Facebook and Twitter and tweeting whatever else is out there. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not hip. I got into texting when my kids were little, and that's about as far as my technology went.
Hey, listen, hang out with us while we visit with our last guest, will you?
Be happy to. I'm really enjoying it.
All right, bringing it home for us is the co-founder of the Atlanta Science Festival, a very patient and enthusiastic Jordan Rose. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, jump right in there. I know you walked in there at the very last minute, so you didn't get the coaching and the mic check, but just everything but eat the microphone. Just run into the very end.
I'm right on top of it now.
So Atlanta Science Festival, you brought the brochures. You got our guests thumbing through them. You've been tacking them up on the wall. Tell us a little bit about this festival and why maybe we should go or help some other folks go.
The Atlanta Science Festival is a week-long celebration of science and technology. We have over 100 different events at 50 venues across the city, from Telus Science Museum in Cartersville to Clayton County Public Libraries to Gwinnett Tech College. We're on college campuses. We're in public parks. We're in the libraries, in the schools. We're everywhere, and it all wraps up on March 29th at Centennial Olympic Park for a giant interactive hands-on science expo. 100 different activities, stage performances. Mayor Reed will be there. We're going to have a great time with science and help people see the connections between science and technology in their daily lives, and also really brand Atlanta as a city where science is happening.
So Atlanta obviously is a city where a lot of technology is happening. How much science is happening here?
Well, between our research institutions,
like we have the CDC, right?
Yeah, we have a lot of CDC. We have
universities.
Yes, sir. And we have Delta Airlines, Coca-Cola. We have big business here in Atlanta that rely on science and technology to be successful. We have a fantastic health IT industry in the state.
Right.
Our biosciences industry is tremendous. It's a vibrant place for science and technology business and. Everywhere from industry to the research universities and in our science classrooms. You know, our science classrooms don't get a whole lot of props in the world here, but we have a lot of great successes. We have the Georgia Science Teacher Association is fabulous. Our science teachers are doing great work in the schools and helping our kids become more scientifically literate and get the skills that they need to enter the workforce and stay here in our region.
The organizational skills alone to run a multi-site event like this, that absolutely blows my mind. Well, you know, Lee and I have been very blessed in that we've had a chance to work with some STEM programs, science, technology, engineering, and math, and have had an opportunity to watch these kids with the robots and some other scientific endeavors in the women in technology stuff that we've been associated with. And so there is some really neat stuff going on, particularly for the youth in this community. What compelled you to get involved? Because you're not a woman in technology.
No, so I'm not.
Must be some other path.
I work at Emory University at the Center for Science Education, and a lot of what I do on a day-to-day basis is working with teachers and helping them teach science in more interesting, engaging ways, and also getting Emory students and faculty engaged in the community and helping them with their science teaching and communication skills. So my professional career has been all about helping scientists talk to the public.
You can take like the very something that is very involved, very intricate, and has a great deal of data and all that kind of the Sheldon type stuff behind it. You know what I mean when I say Sheldon, right?
The Big Bang.
And you can craft it in a way that somebody like Lee and I can understand it, or an eighth grade student that's hearing about it for the first time, and then you're helping teachers craft their learning lessons to communicate. What a cool job.
Yeah, it's a fantastic job. I get to work with, kindergartners and teachers and administrators in the school districts, university faculty, scientists. I get to work with a lot of different people and hear a lot of different things. We get to tell stories about science and technology and help the public get engaged and learn about it through storytelling.
Now, is this event for small children or adults?
This is not one single event. This is over 100 events happening. And so we do have events for children and families happening at libraries and museums, most of which are free and open to the public. We also have events specific for adults. We have a Science of Beer event at Monday Night Brewing. We have
cooking.
Yeah, a wine science event.
That got people's attention.
My attention. I turned my mic back on.
We have a Science to Farm to Plate
event where
for a restaurant.
For a restaurant, yeah, Gaia Gardens, and it's a fundraiser for Community Guilds, which is working to help students gain a sense of creativity and design thinking. It's a mobile makerspace, the STEAM truck, science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. Little
very
plug for
nice.
Them.
Yeah. Well, see, here's something else that just it absolutely fascinates me. This is your first year with this thing, and you've got 80 partners.
We have over 80 partners, including school districts, colleges, universities, restaurants.
This is your first
businesses.
Would you like a sales job at Business Radio 8? 80 partners. How many underwriters partners. Do you think you could get for
really?
Us in like 6 months' time?
And the great
How?
Thing, everyone, we make it easy. We make it easy for you to participate. I mean, it's not hard to pitch this. It's
well, give me
it's
your
getting
give
getting
me
the
pitch.
Community, yeah. Getting kids excited about science and technology,
right.
So they can get the education that they need here in Atlanta. They can get the training that they need here in the region and get jobs here and stay here. You know, a lot of our great research institutions pull in people from elsewhere and send them back. You know, we need to do a better job of creating, keeping them here, developing the talent pipeline, keeping them here. And you know, everybody is curious. Everybody asks questions. Everybody has that scientist inside of them. And the way that our museums and schools and community groups are already out in the community selling the idea of capitalizing on your curiosity, of asking questions and observing the natural world and using that as a way to find the beauty in the world and getting our professionals and our scientists and engineers into the community. Everybody's doing that in their own particular way. We're not trying to do anything very new or different. We're just trying to lift up all the great work that these 80 partners are doing. So I don't have to convince Fernbank Museum to run a program that gets kids excited about science and technology. They're already doing that. This is an opportunity to connect Fernbank Museum with the zoo and with the Botanical Garden and with Georgia State University and to come together as a community to celebrate the great assets that we have here in Atlanta and the opportunities for students and families to become scientifically literate, to make decisions that affect their family, consumer decisions, personal decisions, that where they can weigh the evidence and make a decision based on evidence.
Now, where do you think the disconnect is in the school system? For you have kids that, like you say, are naturally curious and they love all of the stuff, the science they see on TV when they come and do some of these stunts and some of these cool things. And then in school, it's somewhere you lose them. You know, it just gets too dry and they're reading textbooks that maybe are dated and that are giving you information that isn't as compelling, as cool as, you know, Bill Nye makes it seem. Like, at what age is that happening and what can we do to kind of not happen?
It typically happens around the middle school age. And part of what happens is science should not be limited to the science classroom.
Is that the kind of the flaw in the thinking,
yeah,
is that they're
go.
Just
yeah.
kind of forcing it in their environment they happen to be in?
Teachers are not the only ones responsible for educating our children, mm-hmm. right? We need families, we need the community, the business community. We need everyone to be talking about science and helping students to advance and get a college education so they can get a career that helps them be successful and helps our community and helps them give back to our community. It's a sort of perpetuating our society. The more we can help our students become educated and give them a sense of responsibility to each other, the better they can give back and
is
help
that
us in the
mission of this event? Is that really what's kind of the driving force, is to keep kids engaged and get them more thinking scientifically throughout their whole life, not
yep.
just
we should be doing this in the classroom. We should be helping teachers and supporting teachers in that mission, and we should be giving students and families opportunities to become scientifically literate outside the classroom, to do experiments at home, to go to the museums, to just take a walk,
right, and look around
right. and you know, look up at the birds and the leaves and ask some questions,
because there's science in everything, right?
There's science in everything.
Now, is there still this gender discrepancy, this gender gap, do girls get less interested quicker in school and go down a different path? Is that still a problem? And if so, what are we doing to address it?
I think it's a problem with how we anticipate what girls might be interested in.
So it is still
not.
A problem. Or
it is a problem.
More guys. Okay.
I think it comes from our community and our values, and the, not our values, our norms, the way that we intend
Jessica's going to edit out anything you say that's politically incorrect, or we're going to pump up the volume, double it, and it's going to be our Twitter clip.
What I'm trying to say is that we have this expectation that girls will become disinterested in science,
right.
and that you know it's sort of a feedback mechanism that reinforces
it's like that self-fulfilling prophecy where you expect it and then it is.
And we also don't do enough to share role models. Of scientists, people think of scientists and they think of an old white guy with crazy hair and a lab
right,
coat.
Right?
Real scientists don't look like that. They look like you and you and you and you.
Right.
I mean, they look like everybody in this room, and they're real people with real interests and outside of the laboratory. And so we need to do a better job of getting those role models in front of our kids so that they can see themselves as scientists and technologists and engineers.
And there's plenty of science in everyday business. There's science in your kitchen, right?
Yeah.
There's science when you're looking at the numbers. There's all these partners. I mean, they have, some of us may not see the connection as quickly as others, but there's science in all this stuff.
Yeah? And I think that's part of why you're doing this, right? You're kind of illustrating this by having 100-plus events around the city for a week kind of showcase it.
Yeah, it's a highlight. It's a celebration of what the city is offering, and it's a way to connect science to the arts. We have great art exhibits at Oglethorpe Museum and the Georgia State campus. We have performances. There's a chemistry poetry slam. I mean, like there's a way to connect anybody's interest to science.
Right.
A lot of people hear the word science and shy away because they think about textbooks and memorizing terminology and doing problem sets and all that. But that's not science. Science is about being curious. It's about asking questions and about being passionate about learning about the world and how each other work.
Now, this festival, it culminates at Centennial Park. What's going to happen there?
We have over 100 different interactive hands-on activities. So we're going to have an inflatable planetarium from Fernbank Science Center. You'll be able to touch a human brain. You'll be able to control a robotic.
That's a selling point, to touch a human brain.
It
brain.
Is. To a 13-year-old, and they're all over
To a 63-year-old. You can control a robotic roach with your cell phone.
Oh, my.
I mean, all this really high-touch, technology and interactive stuff that you can do. Nobody's going to be there handing out pamphlets or selling wares.
But no one's reading textbooks.
No one's reading any textbooks. We're going to have a science cafe stage and a main stage where you can see some entertainment. We'll have a science punk rock band performing on stage. And there'll be really cool opportunities to learn about not just science that explodes and changes color and sort of does the wow kind of factor, but also science that's actually happening in our research institutions and in our businesses. You know, what is the science and technology that underlies Delta Airlines?
Right.
You know, what are the engineers doing to those engines? How do they work? You know, where does the air go and how does it create all that thrust? I mean, you'll be able to see an engine turning and talk to the engineers and talk to the pilots about how the plane works.
So it's probably a little late in the game for new sponsors this time around, but I bet you're
we're going to be back next
excited
year.
About next year,
I bet
right?
Year two,
and we'll definitely have you come back and keep us up to speed with what's going on with this whole effort. And I don't know, maybe it'd be fun to have you come in and explain to us what's happening, like how our voice goes through the microphone and all that.
Yeah,
right.
And maybe have some kids come in and interview. That's what we ought to do. Let's have some kids come in, like before the next one. Would you be up for that?
Absolutely.
And we'll talk them through it and ask them about their experience at the last one.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
You up for that?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right. So coordinates. Let's make sure our listeners know where to go because you've got a website. And
we do.
I have a pamphlet. Not everybody has this.
I know, but like you have like a PDF of this thing or
all
this information?
We sure do. If you go to our website at atlantasciencefestival.org, you can see our listing of over 100 events. You can get information about the expo at Centennial Park. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, ATL SciFest. And, connect with us. Join our mailing list, follow us, and you'll get updates. You'll be able to download this beautiful pink PDF. 32-page booklet. but you'll be able to get connected with the effort and learn how and where and when to be on March 22nd through
29th. 22nd through the 29th. It all culminates on the 29th. So the morning of the 29th, run by your friendly PNC ATM. Grab enough money for a couple of $10 plates at J. Christopher's and then hit the expo.
Yeah. That's the
See
plan,
how it all
right?
just
That's
ties together?
That's beautiful the way you did that. Beautiful.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you so much.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.